Welcome to the Nerd Party.
You remind me of the babe. Babe with the power. Power of voodoo.
Voodoo.
You do.
Do what?
Remind me of the babe.
I saw my baby.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge, and I'm joined by Lindsay Kendrick. Hi, Lindsay.
Hello. It's good to be here.
It's good to be here in your house.
In my I'm invading dining your house. Area.
Exactly. So thank you for letting me invade. And I'm excited. And I know you're excited because we're talking today about a movie that I've never seen that you're a big fan of. What movie is that, Lindsay?
It is Labyrinth. Oh,
yay.
My gosh.
Not Pan's Labyrinth,
no.
You Guillermo del Toro fans. This is Labyrinth, 1986 Labyrinth with Mr. David Bowie, because we wanted to do an episode to honor David Bowie, who passed away a year ago this week, or on Tuesday the 10th.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. I was just reminded of it because of social media.
I know.
And it's just, I still keep forgetting that he's gone.
Well, it's hard because, like, he feels like such a constant presence. And I just shared a video on my Facebook of him talking about the internet, like back in like, it was the late 90s, like right when the internet was becoming a thing, and his predictions. And the interviewer was kind of being very skeptical about like, oh, you don't think the internet will do all this. And David Bowie's like, no, I think it's going to do all these amazing things. And it's like, he was spot on. So it's like, he's constantly like, I feel like he's still a presence. And for good reason, because he's wonderful. But I for whatever reason, have never seen Labyrinth. I'm a big Jim Henson fan, mostly because of The Muppets.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Dark Crystal when I was a kid. And I just remember being struck really by like, oh my God. I almost felt like even though it was a kid's movie, I had this feeling of like, I shouldn't be watching this. This is dark and creepy. And I felt like I was doing something wrong. But I don't know. Have you seen The Dark Crystal?
Yes, I have. But I saw Labyrinth as a child the first time. But I saw Dark Crystal when I was in college
for
the first time. So I have a different perspective, but I think that if you got that feeling from Dark Crystal, Labyrinth is different, but it has that similarity where something feel, it seems like it's for children, but there's something so mature about it that it's hard to articulate.
Right.
So you might get that same feeling from Labyrinth.
Okay.
We'll see.
So I know that the film's conceptual designer, Brian Froud, I think is how you pronounce his name, they wanted to work on another project together. I think he worked with him on Dark Crystal. And the whole idea, I think, with this one was that they both wanted to do a lighter picture. So what you're saying as far as this one being a little bit more like, oh, it's a little bit more upbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they both felt like Dark Crystal, because I don't think Dark Crystal had a strong reception as far as the box office went. And I think they attributed that to the fact that it was kind of twisted and dark. So they said with this, they wanted to make a conscious effort to make it a little lighter and a little funnier.
It really is. They Dark Crystal and Labyrinth are similar because they're both kind of hard to explain. Like, you don't know why things are happening, but it seems right.
Right.
But Labyrinth is a lot goofier. It's definitely more Muppety.
Okay.
It's even though, yes, Dark Crystal has, you know, the same thing going on in that regard, but it's more Muppety in the comedic sense.
Right.
It's
and
very
Dark Crystal
goofy.
Doesn't have any like humans in it, as far as I'm
I don't think I so. I've only seen it once and I don't remember.
Okay.
So if there were any, they weren't important.
They clearly were not memorable. But all right. And then something else I had no idea when I was doing research for this, but Terry Jones from Monty Python wrote this movie.
Yes.
Which is kind of awesome and might also have something to do with the funny stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Although apparently it didn't. He was very against this movie being funny, like, or not necessarily being funny, but they were starting to slant more humorous, especially when David Bowie got involved. And Bowie was kind of like, I really like want this to be funnier and kind of witty and stuff. So Jim Henson was like, he's David Bowie, we'll do whatever he wants. And Terry Jones was like, no, this needs to be like weirder and darker. I think it's kind of funny that they had a Monty Python guy writing the movie and specifically saying this movie needs to be less funny.
You know, and I think I can kind of see that, even though it's so strange at first, because I feel like Monty Python is so goofy when you first think about them. And then when you watch something, there's such an underlying darkness.
Yeah.
Like, especially something like Life of Brian, where, you know, it's fun. You're laughing, but you're like, this is dark. And then David Bowie's the reverse, where he seems so mysterious and he's like an artist. And you put him up on this pedestal because he's like a god. But then he's so goofy, just like all the little bits that he's done throughout his life, appearances on shows, like he's not really too good for anything,
right?
So
I think it is kind of funny that he ended up being the big guy, like this big kind of almost untouchable being that David Bowie is the one who was like, no, let's just make it more fun,
yeah,
and more relatable. And Terry Jones meanwhile is like, no. And he was very upset specifically about the fact that he wanted the Goblin King and the Goblin King's lair, that whole thing, to be kind of the goal that they were working towards the end of the movie. And you wouldn't see it throughout the whole movie. It would be a journey to get there. And then it would be like this big mystery that would be revealed at the end. Mm. And then once David Bowie got involved, of course, that changed completely, where it was like, we have to have him throughout the whole movie.
Yep.
And I know he was not thrilled about that. I think he specifically was like, David Bowie being involved is not a good idea. But now we look back on it and everyone's like, Labyrinth, the David Bowie. It's like the two go, you can't have one without the other.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how you'll respond to it, because I noticed that it has a low Rotten Tomatoes score, or a relatively low score.
Yeah, it's a kind of mix. Yeah.
68, very mixed. It's not that most critics hated it, but it's just, I was so involved with it as a kid that I don't know if my opinion of it is slanted in any way,
right,
and it's not very objective. And the fact that it's not just a childhood movie, but it's a David Bowie movie, so I don't feel comfortable insulting it.
Well, yeah. Well, I love, I'm coming from an angle, like I said, I'm a fan of Jim Henson. I don't know how, I've seen bits and pieces of Labyrinth, and it's I haven't been that into it. But I also wasn't a David Bowie fan at that point. I kind of got into David Bowie in college. I went through what I call my musical revolution, where I all of a sudden my world had opened up. Like I never liked the Beatles or Bob Dylan, but all of a sudden like I was really into them and just going after all these artists and bands that I never listened to before. And somewhere at the like beginning of my senior year of college, I eventually got to David Bowie and just kind of listened to his music for a few weeks and nothing else. And I just loved it. I got so into it. And I more recently, when he passed away, I kind of went through another phase with that. And then Black Star, which is just
oh my goodness.
And the music I watched. So when they announced that he died, a lot of people were posting the Lazarus music video, and I finally watched it because I hadn't listened to Black Star, and I watched it and just being so, I remember being so like, I was at work and I was like, oh, I probably shouldn't say that. I was working at work. No, but I remember watching it and just like sitting in my cubicle and just like feeling this like, oh, just feeling like so like, oh my God. Like reports have come out now that he didn't know that he was actually dying. Like he knew he had the disease and everything, but there's a strong sense from that video that it was almost predicting what was about to happen.
Yes. I think that maybe just it was on a more subconscious level that he knew. Like sometimes I hear stories of people that they know, but they wouldn't be able to actually say that. I remember I heard that he died before I went into work, and I was in a position where I was able to also work from home if I decided to. And I was getting ready. I was going to get ready to go in. And I physically couldn't. And I don't think that I can't think of any other celebrity that affected me that much. And I cried and I stayed home and it felt wrong in every way. And I watched that video and I just felt like it was like a borderline religious experience. Like it just felt like it was too much.
Yeah, it was, it was pretty, listening to that album after that happened, it was a very transcendent experience. Okay, so you saw this when you were a kid. Do you remember how you saw it? Like what your experience with it was?
I don't know if I could remember the very first time because I was probably super young, like borderline memories fading away too young.
Right.
Again, like a lot of my movies back then, it was probably shown to me because of my older sister. She's like 4 years older than me, so she always had sort of a jump on things that were cool and like stuff like that. So I don't remember the very first time I watched it. I just always knew it. It was sort of like something that you just always know. And
it seems like it's kind of in the vein of like the Neverending Story.
Yes, absolutely. Like that was what I was trying to think of.
Which I did see when I was young. Okay. So I have an attachment to that movie.
Right. So imagine someone seeing the Neverending Story for the first time as an adult. And it's like, I don't know how they would feel about it.
Yeah.
But I really love it. And it's sort of like Labyrinth is very different from the Neverending Story, but they're both so incredibly 80s.
Yeah.
And just like everything about them that I have that attachment, that childhood attachment that I have to a lot of things. But I think it's the first time I ever saw David Bowie. I think it has to be because I can't think of anything else that he would have like visually appeared in.
Yeah,
it's, that I would have seen.
Isn't something that my super conservative parents were necessarily shoving at me, saying, "Listen to this." So I feel like a lot of kids probably were exposed to David Bowie for the first time through this movie.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things that like I picked up as I got older when I saw the movie that as a kid I don't know how. I guess I just. My mind wasn't on those things, but there are some like his pants are very tight. So
oh, good.
There are close ups and there's a lot of them.
This as is long all as, only contributing to okay, my good. Like excitement. To
good. Cause there's movie. A lot of there are, I remember there being multiple close ups and it never sunk in until I think I was in college and I was just like cackling with my roommates.
I feel like, didn't we talk about tight pants? During Christmas.
Yes, like, I'm sorry.
I can't. Are only, like, they're a constant subject when I come to record with you.
I know. I am aware of okay. all tight pants. But this is like, I think a lot this of people.
This is David Bowie tight pants.
Yeah, and a lot of people talk about those infamous shots. my roommates and I would talk about it all the time. Uh-huh. And we'd laugh every time it cut to like just his, like a close up to his like crotch area.
I love that this movie has close-ups.
It does. It's
crotch.
A children and it's a children's
that's fantastic
movie. I would say
I really
it's a
hope
family.
That you're telling me the truth and that I'm not going to be disappointed. There are actual just shots of his crotch framed perfectly.
Yes. No. You. If as long as this movie hasn't been this version hasn't been edited, edited.
And George Lucas was an executive producer on this movie, so maybe this is a special edition version.
That would
and
be
he edited out everything and just added CGI everywhere.
That would be super disappointing.
What a shame.
But yeah, I mean, I think that I can say that the music is legitimately good, even if you don't have any kind of attachment to it. And I'm sure you've heard it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
My college
the babe with the power.
Yeah, exactly.
I know all that
exactly.
Stuff.
Yeah. So my college roommates and I would always sing these songs together. We'd dance around to the movie together, like we were little kids. And we actually had a giant David Bowie poster that we would like pose with because we loved him so much. He's definitely my favorite. He is my favorite solo artist of like all time. So
which is completely understandable.
Yes,
he's awesome.
I think so. So I'm excited because it's been a few years since I've seen it
great.
So
my prediction, I really want to like it. I think I'll appreciate it at the very least from a perspective of a David Bowie fan. I think it's a fitting time to watch this movie since I've never seen it before, just kind of as a celebration of him in general. I hope I like it. I am kind of nervous that this is going to be a Gremlins situation where I didn't grow up with Gremlins and I was not a big fan. But who knows? Maybe this will be good. Maybe this will be the opposite experience because David Bowie's involved. We will find out in just a little bit. So stay tuned, everybody.
Now available to own on video cassette.
Okay, we are back. We just watched Labyrinth. Lindsay, I need you to explain what the hell just happened. Just try to explain this movie, because I am not entirely sure what I just experienced.
I think sort of what we started to talk about, I think Terry Jones was like, okay, I have this very sort of funny, semi-logical idea. For a story, and David Bowie was like, I just want to make
I want to be in this movie, and I want my crotch to be in this
movie. I want it
and
to be
all I want.
A very long music video with a lot of like cool dancing and glitter. I do think there is a plot, but it's loose.
I honestly, if there is a plot, I'm not sure what it is. It's basically so Jennifer Connelly, and I mean, if you're listening to this, you've probably seen this movie, but basically Jennifer Connelly, she is... She wants to be an actress. She's at the beginning of the movie. She's practicing, like she's reading from this book, and she is like reciting lines, and she can't remember her lines. But then she has to babysit her brother, and she hates her little baby brother, so she wants the goblins to come and take him away.
Yeah, I think that her it's not even just her brother. It's like her baby brother represents every lame thing from the real world that she hates, and I think it's not even just if it's the act, if the reason she wants to act is because of the escapism, because her room, she's a teenager, and like me as a teenager, actually, her room is full of like things like stuffed animals and little, you know, she loves like fairies and unicorns and fantasy. And, you know, The Wizard of Oz was one of the books that they had up there. So like all that kind of, and obviously I think there's a reason why you can see like The Wizard of Oz title.
Right.
There, like from some obvious connections, but, so yeah, her brother is, you know, sort of chaining her to reality, and he's also annoying because he's a crying baby. So yeah, she's because of the play that she's got that she was practicing lines from, she kind of sort of paraphrases from it,
right,
saying that she, you know, wishes her baby brother was taken away by the goblins from the story, and
then they take him away. They're real goblins that take him away. I think you have looked way more into this than the filmmakers who actually made the movie did.
I think it's because it almost made more sense to me when I was younger because of how my brain worked. I think
when you're a kid, you are less in tune with logic, things that make sense, and more like, oh, this is just what happens. Oh my gosh, I'm still trying to just wrap my head around it. But like, so Jennifer Connelly, she is so bizarre in this movie. She's such, I thought like at the beginning, oh, she's acting out this play, so she's speaking dramatically. But then the whole time she speaks in this very dramatic tone. And I'm like, wait a second, what is going on? Why does she talk like this? So she kind of wants to live in this fantasy world. And then the goblins take her brother away. And if she has a character arc, my thought would have been like, okay, if I'm writing a story where a girl doesn't love her brother, her character arc would probably be by the end of this movie, she will have learned to appreciate her brother. So, but David Bowie takes away her little brother, and then immediately she's like, I'm sorry, I want him back. And it was like, all right, well, I guess that was her whole character arc. Because in the rest of the movie, it's basically just her like going, she goes here, something happens, and then she goes here, and then something else happens. And it's just like visually, and like the puppets, and like it's very cool, but then it's just, there's nothing really driving it. It's just like she goes here and does this, she goes here and does that.
I think it's very similar to, and I don't know if I want to exactly compare it to this, but for me, other than The Wizard of Oz, which is sort of one goofy thing after another, but it does sort of, it's more coherent.
Yeah.
Alice in Wonderland, particularly the animated version, but I mean, the books as well, in the fact that these things happen and they're not going in any particular direction, and they're intentionally not going in any particular direction, like, it's absurdist and it's like it's there to infuriate the main character, which is like she's very much
sometimes
like
sometimes the viewer too.
Yes, and she's very much like Alice in that she just cannot handle anything,
right?
And she's not chill about anything, and she's over dramatic about everything, and then sometimes she's chill when you wouldn't think she would be chill, like that, like there'll be something crazy that happens and she's like, yeah, that's normal.
It is kind of weird that she, like, because you mentioned Alice in Wonderland, and this movie has way more in common than that, than The Wizard of Oz, but they put The Wizard of Oz book all over this movie.
Yeah, I think they're trying to get the message of The Wizard of Oz across, but they use, like, Alice in Wonderland type scenes, because the main message is you know, Dorothy appreciating her real life and not wanting to have to run away to fantasy land. So she has the same... this character has the same interest. She wants to escape her actual real boring life, even though, I mean, her parents look loaded. I mean, that house.
Her life doesn't seem that bad, come to think of it. She gets to live in this wonderful house. She gets everything she wants. And the only thing that sucks is her crying little brother.
I think she can't get dates, which is something else. That's kind of why I was like, oh, that's me.
Her mom's like, you should have a date. Maybe a date would be good for you. And I guess the implication is that David Bowie is the man of her dreams, which is a little... just a little creepy.
Yeah, I kind of think it is, because like a lot of teenagers, especially ones like me and like this character, I'm not nearly as ridiculous as she was, but I don't think.
No, but she wants you to think that audience, but it's true. she's just Jennifer Connelly in this movie.
Okay, yes, basically. So I really, when I was a teenager, I definitely I wished I had rewatched it more as a teen, and not because I watched it a lot as a child and a lot as an adult. But if I watched it a little bit more as a teen, I think I would have related, because I really did feel out of place and I didn't date. And I was really obsessed with like fantasy and like, you know, Disney and the Lord of the Rings and Muppets and stuff. And I drew a lot and I daydreamed a lot. And it's not that I hated my family. It was just that, but like, I
hated my family.
I didn't really appreciate everything around me because life was so obnoxious.
So you're saying you were a bratty teenager like Jennifer Connelly?
No, I mean, I had my bratty phases, but I think it was more not connecting with people my own age.
Right.
And I think that it was, I don't know if she had it. Did she have friends? I mean, maybe, maybe not. I don't think she did. She made Hoggle became a friend.
Hogwarts? I mean, Hoggle. Isn't it interesting? I thought that was so funny. So his name's Hoggle, the old man Muppet and old man midget Muppet.
Like
and
a she calls goblin.
Him Hogwart. Oh, goblin. That's right.
I guess.
She calls him Hogwart. And then there's another character named Ludo. Is that the mm-hmm. Ludo? So Ludo Bagman, Hogwarts. I think J.K. Rowling is a big Labyrinth fan. I just want to point that out. So that's interesting. I mean, those parallels are definitely interesting. Not being a teenage girl, I don't know if I can relate to being Jennifer Connelly, but I can relate to wanting to make out with David Bowie.
Yeah, I think
that was the way I connected to this
most
movie.
People can understand that. And people, like, you know, teen girls, that's kind of, their minds are, I think, underappreciated because they're so... people see them as so ridiculous, and they're not their ideas.
The fantasy of her, like, oh, all dressed up,
and
going, like, being loved and appreciated, or whatever.
Teenage girls, I think their ideas just aren't really valued as to be taken seriously because of that whole hormonal aspect mm-hmm. of their lives and they're being young. But I mean, that's why a lot of them dream of, like, oh, boy bands or this or that. This this older actor, because he's so dreamy and nothing like the stupid boys in my grade and all that kind of stuff. So it's very realistic. But I do admit that, well, I don't want to say it's creepy because, I mean, it's David Bowie, but I do
but
think
it is a little creepy.
It's strange because, like, he's definitely after the baby. So, like, that's the goal. But at the same time, there is that, like, strange tension between them. And she says that, you know, you have no power over me. So she's like, you know what, this is not the path that I'm after. Right. Like, leave me alone. Like, you know.
And then, but he, like, says this, like, there's this weird monologue where he's like, I will be your slave and you will do, I will love you and do whatever. And it was like, whoa, wait a second. Is this that kind of movie? Oh, God.
Yes.
What just happened?
And that when she took a bite of the, like, the peach or whatever that was, and then she went into the, like,
the orgy.
Where she
she went into the movie Caligula. We can say it. It's okay.
Yeah, it was very Eyes Wide Shut. Like, she she went into where she forgot reality completely and just, like, the people dancing,
right?
Sort of drunkenly looking, and she was in the bubble, and she had the beautiful dress on. Again, that's like just speaking to the whole fantasy of just being, like, you know, you are part of a fairy tale that's sort of come to life, and it's, everything's glittery and there's a mysterious guy. It's sort of very like gothic romance, you know, this mysterious sort of aloof kind of guy that she sees him in the
it's a little like Edward Cullen and Bella,
except
it's David Bowie and
it's
not,
David Bowie and not some lame vampire. They both sparkle, so that's the one
there's
thing.
There's a lot of glitter in this movie. There's glitter on it. I guess that was Jim Henson was like, make it more magical, just pour glitter on everything. So trees, walls, everything is covered in glitter. But no, so David Bowie's a little creepy as far as his relationship. It's a little, I'm sure Jim Henson did not mean for it to come across as kind of weird like that, but it definitely feels like is this, you know. But,
right.
David Bowie, it's so interesting because, like you were saying, Terry Jones very clearly wanted this to probably be one kind of movie, and David Bowie's involvement turned it into a completely different kind of movie. It's like, and it's kind of weird because this movie is kind of a musical, but not really. It like almost like there are a couple songs in the movie and a couple dance numbers, but they're like really far and few between, and they're random. Like David mm-hmm. Bowie like starts singing the Babe song, and it's like, where did this come from, and who is the Babe, who are they singing about? I yeah. don't know. This
I mean the baby maybe
maybe they're singing about that's true
the baby with the
but speaking of that scene, like this is the first time like you see, like, he comes, the Goblin King comes and steals the baby away, and he tells Jennifer Connelly, you know, you have this much time, and he dances with his hands and the glass ball, and everything's ridiculous. But like, it's like, oh, it's very sinister. And then the first time you see him with his, like, minions, they're, like, dancing and having fun, and I was like, this isn't so bad. I wouldn't mind, like, living with the Goblin King forever. Maybe she should just leave her brother there.
Exactly. I mean, I would have just stayed with my brother. I mean, her parents were kind of lame.
Yeah, her home life didn't seem that like desirable anyway, so
yeah,
like,
emotionally
I mean it live with David Bowie forever, he'll be your love slave, that doesn't sound like a bad idea,
right? And he was, and I made the joke that it was like Viggo from Ghostbusters, you know, like I want the baby, but he was so like sweet with the baby, and probably yeah, because it was
nice.
Probably like, because it was David Bowie and an actual baby, and they were like, let's dance together, right. And it was really cute. But I mean, he just seemed like
there wasn't really a threat of anything. No, like it's
not
like
really.
I have to get my brother back, but you're like, well, yeah, I mean, if you don't get your brother back by 13 o'clock, it's not gonna be that bad. I mean, it seems like he's pretty happy, and David Bowie's a pretty good dad to this baby.
Right.
But this movie had so many weird things going on in it, and it's kind of like it was very 80s, like the soundtrack mm-hmm. is ridiculous, and there's like all kinds of porno sax in this movie and synthesizers galore, but like there's so many just like random like things happening in this movie, like the blue screen puppets, like the orange in the forest where she's dancing, and they're like very clearly like, we have to shoot this on a blue screen so they can do all these weird dances. But then for some reason they shot Jennifer Connelly on the blue screen too, so it looks so fake. But it's like this whole extended dance sequence where they're singing and dancing, and then she's like, I'm just getting out of here, and she leaves, and it's like, okay, wait, what just happened? I feel like visually assaulted. What is
right.
going on?
It's just like one more random obstacle in a series of obstacles. Yeah. Yes, like there's no, it definitely meanders. Like the plot meanders, and I think what I still love about the movie, even though it's ridiculous, is that like those little parts are like the best part, even though normally like the climax of a movie is the part where you're the most engaged.
Yeah.
The climax of this movie, I'm actually like the least engaged. Like I'm like, can you right. just dance around?
I'm definitely
for me?
Like, I agree with you. I was more into like whenever it was like, let's sing and dance or yeah. do something like weird. Whenever it was like plot, like I've got to go do this, I was like, I don't really care. But whenever it was something like bizarre, like her falling through the pit of hands and like weird stuff like that, it was like, oh, this is kind of cool.
Yeah.
When they try to bring it back into focus, then you're kind of like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Right.
But something else that was just like, I guess Jim Henson was like, we've got to have a farting pond in this movie. And there's like a sphincter pond in this movie. And it's like it's pretty graphic.
Yeah. I'm like, I feel violated when I see that. And it, as a kid, again, I saw it and I accepted it and I was
right.
okay. I was like, this is silly,
when
but whatever.
You're like, oh, it's a farting. It's funny.
Yeah.
And it's like, but it's pretty graphic. And it's yeah. like, it's so, they spend so much time in that pond. And it's almost like they were like, we have to have like, this movie didn't have any fart jokes, so let's just really make up for it and spend way too much time at this pond. But like that's just that the forest scene, like there's so many just random bizarre things in this movie where it's like, what is happening? Then they do David Bowie chases her around in the staircase and they're jumping mm-hmm. around and singing, and I had no idea what was going on.
I love that part because it was like an Escher painting, and in her room she
I thought you were gonna say it was like an Usher music video, and I was gonna be really happy.
There's a, she has like a big poster or picture in her room of something that looks very similar. So I think like every single thing that happens when she's in like Labyrinth World is a reflection of something in her room and in her, I mean in her real life and in her psyche.
Right.
So I think all that is just like her projecting like
everything on there.
Yeah, it's like it's more of like a journey through her like inner mental. I mean, you definitely can take it literally, and I still sort of do.
Yes.
But it's sort of Wizard of Oz and that, like, you know, everything
took place in her head.
Yeah, and like everything, like, you know, every person, or not every person, but a lot of the characters over in like Labyrinth World were like toys or like stuffed animals or something reflected somewhere in her room, like if you kind of like look around. So I think it was one of those like you were there and you were there, so it's,
so the Wizard of Oz reference kind of comes into play.
Yeah.
Well, here's what's so weird about her character arc. So the movie, I get, so at the beginning we're saying like, oh, she needs to learn to kind of live in the real world. It's not really like we don't get any strong idea of what her character arc is supposed to be. It's kind of like she's sort of bratty. She doesn't like her brother. Her brother gets taken away and she wants him back. But if the her character arc is supposed to be, okay, at the end of this movie, you're supposed to have, like, come back to the real world, and now you're going to live and occupy it, then she retreats back into her fantasy land and calls all her imaginary friends back, and they have a party. And the movie ends with her having a party with all these goblins, and it's like, wait a second, what is, what's the point of this? Yep. I don't understand.
Yep, and I don't know the real process that they went through exactly, but I feel like it was originally supposed to be, like, maybe a little wink to the characters. I feel like that maybe that's what you would think would happen, and but then I feel like they're like, no, that's too sad, let's have them be actually real in her real life, and she can call them at any time.
And they didn't think about the fact that it's like, if we're trying to have her break away from her imaginary world, this is probably not the best way to do it,
right?
To encourage her to retreat into her imagination whenever things go wrong.
There's definitely not one solid message that you're supposed to take away. It's just like, but whatever.
There is a solid constant in this movie, and it's David Bowie's crotch. Can we just talk about that for a second? There are a lot. I was kind of hoping you weren't exaggerating, and you weren't exaggerating, so thank you. But there are a couple shots in this movie where it was like, this is a kid's movie, and this is happening right now.
Yep. I do like that, you know, back in the 80s, they were just like, kids can, they'll be fine.
They'll be fine. They don't care. They don't notice these things. But the thing is, it's the 21st century, and we notice these things. We notice these things in high definition, thanks to Blu-ray.
Or maybe, I don't know. And what I almost keep forgetting every time is, yes, his pants are tight, but also they're thin.
Yeah.
They're very thin. Like, they're not like leather pants. Nope. They're definitely just like, especially when he's got the white pants on. And it doesn't even have to be a close up shot. It's just like from a distance, you're like, oh boy, okay. Well, I can't look anywhere else on the screen. I feel inappropriate. Yeah,
pretty much.
But it's so awesome because it's David. If it was anybody else, I'd be like, this is disgusting. Right. But it's David Bowie, and I'm like, that's okay.
Yeah.
He can do what he wants.
It's true. He does whatever. So do you have like a favorite, what's your favorite moment from this movie?
Oh gosh. I just think it's, oh my gosh. It's like a tie. It's a three-way tie between the magic dance song. Uh-huh. Because it's so happy, and in the bubble, the magic bubble is the second part, and then the last part is the when he's singing on the stairs upside down, walking upside down. I think that's like the high point for me. For me, that's the climax, and maybe it's the climax of the movie when she finally defeats him, because
I think it's supposed to be.
Yeah, because to me, it's like
that's the turning
point. It's the turning point when everything sort of changes right after that. Yeah. So, yeah, that's, those three are like, I mean, they're all David Bowie centered. Yes. So it makes sense.
With David Bowie is fantastic.
Yeah.
I do like, any of his ridiculous, the song and dances. Mm-hmm. I think probably the magic one is one of my favorite scenes in the movie. That sphincter pond is going to haunt my nightmares for a long, long time to come. Yeah. So that, maybe that's my favorite part. Maybe I just enjoyed farting noises more than I want to admit. But So as far as how this holds up, it still holds up for you through all these years?
It does, but it's a different kind of holding up. Like, it's not when I go back and I watch The Wizard of Oz and I say, like, wow, this is a, you know, it's perfect movie making, you know, for me. But this is in a different way because it doesn't follow any of the rules of what a good movie should be in a lot of ways. it's David Bowie kind of doing whatever the heck he wants for half the movie. Yeah. And that's, I think it's still just as enjoyable for me. In slightly new ways as an adult, picking up on new things each time I see it. So it holds up but just in a different way. It's not the same as if I rewatched an old classic.
Yeah. I didn't love it. It was fun to watch just to finally see it as a David Bowie fan and just to kind of, I know this movie means a lot to people and a lot of people were introduced to Bowie through this movie. It's just so baffling. Like, this movie it's like visually the puppets and all that stuff is amazing, but like the story and the characters just make no sense. And it's kind of hysterical. Like, we're just talking about how the plot of the movie is a girl who lives in her imagination takes a journey to learn that she is still going to live in her imagination.
Well, she puts some of her knickknacks away at the end. She's like, no. And then she's
giving up her dream to be a theater. And I was like, wait, why would she give up her dream?
Yeah, did she put away the playbill? Yeah, because I think that's kind of weird.
Playbill and like all this stuff. And it's like, wait, you're giving up your dream of being an actress. And I, you know, like you were saying, you're like, well, I think it's because she wants to, you know, go and live in the real world, but then all her puppet imaginary friends
never
come,
mind
and it's like, no, just kidding,
I'll just live in these like hallucinations forever.
So it's a very bizarre movie. Like you said, it kind of drags. It's a lot of vignettes that kind of are very similar as far as like, she goes here, this happens, she escapes, she goes here, this, you know, it's very kind of repetitive and sort of drags on a bit, but it was fun to watch, and I appreciated kind of the effort that went into it more than the actual product. I don't know. So how many glass hallucinogenic Caligula glass balls would you give this?
Oh gosh.
On a scale of 1 to 5.
Oh gosh. See, this is hard for me because I feel like I have to do two different ones. One for much I love it and two for how quality it is.
Go for it.
I'll probably be generous. In terms of quality, I would say 3 out of 5.
Okay.
Just because of all of the things that they've tried that probably maybe hadn't been tried before then. And the quality of the songs and how much, you know. And then the other one is like a 5 out of 5 because I just get like a thrill out of watching all of David Bowie's zany.
You can say it.
Okay. All of his like zany, like it's just clearly just like so much fun for him and
everyone else. A very good time.
And yeah, so it's in enjoyability and how much I love it is like a 5 in terms of like, yeah, if I'm going to talk about how like good of a quality of a movie it is as a whole, as a cohesive whole, okay, maybe like 3 out of 5.
Yeah. I'd probably give it a 2. Like I already said, it just kind of, it didn't ever really mesh for me, but I really, like, there are a lot of fun things in this movie, and, you know, just watching David Bowie, it's really fun to kind of see him doing, like, right in the midst of the 80s when that was just the best time to be alive, apparently. But it's kind of sad, you know, it is sort of sad that Jim Henson's live, quote-unquote, live action career didn't really take off. You know, I don't think Dark Crystal did very well at the box office. This movie lost money, which kind of shocked me just because it has such a cult following. But this was his last movie, so he never really made anything else after it. But such an interesting, like, the fact that Jim Henson did The Muppets, like Sesame Street and all that stuff, and then made two very trippy, weird, dark kids movies. It's very interesting, like, creative choices.
Right. I like how deep he tried to be with them. I mean, not that the Muppets don't have those moments as well, but it's just in a different way. But yeah, I think, again, it has a little bit of edge because of the childhood connection, because almost everything that I watched over and over my childhood will have, like, a little bit of an edge. And I think anyone who watched it at the time, it probably meant something, especially since there hadn't been that much that was similar to it at yeah. that point either. So it was like, whoa, this is weird. I mean, yeah, I didn't watch it when it first came out, but I was probably like, I don't know, I might have been like 4.
Yeah.
Maybe even younger. I don't know.
I wish, like, I can't think of other movies off the top of my head that do it. I mean, Star Wars does it a little bit, but like any movies where like the characters are interacting with just like giant puppets and like animatronic puppets and things like that, I kind of miss that. Like, that's something yep. that, like, even though I don't love this movie and I don't really remember The Dark Crystal, but that, just that idea of like that sort of style, I kind of wish somebody would maybe try to make that a comeback. And I feel like maybe somebody has, and I'm just not thinking about it.
That would be awesome. I mean, wasn't there another Muppet type movie? You know, yeah. why doesn't the, I mean, there have been two the, actual yeah. Muppet movies, but I mean, why don't they do push it a little like bit original. Further? I feel like the fear of it just not being
successful.
Everything has to be CG. I know. It's hard for a movie like, you know, Kubo and the Two Strings to like get a lot of attention from yeah. families and kids, because it's like not,
it's original not, and it's not something they're used to.
It's not CG anything. Yeah. Even stop motion throws people off sometimes. So
yeah.
But I wish someone would take a risk anyway.
I know. I know they've been talking about doing like a rebootish sequel to Labyrinth.
Mm.
Maybe that'll be it. I doubt it.
And Bowie's not around.
I don't know. Maybe just leave that alone.
Yeah.
Especially in the wake of right. Bowie's passing. Maybe just
yeah, let that be. Absolutely. If Bowie was still around and he was all for it, then I'd be like, yeah, let's yeah. do it. But it's just, it wouldn't be the same. I think he is Labyrinth. Like, the yeah. whole reason to watch it is him. If it didn't have him, yeah. like, I wouldn't care. No,
that's totally true. But all right. Well, thank you. I'm glad we got to watch this. I'm glad I got to see it. Thank you for introducing me to this wonderful, strange, ridiculous movie. Where can people find you on Twitter?
Sure. It's a tiny Amazon with little underscores between the words. My name on Twitter is Pocket Princess.
There you go. And then I'm at Yay Sean Dorman. So come talk to us and tell us what you think of Labyrinth, if you like it, if you think it's overrated. Tell us your favorite David Bowie memories, because he is wonderful. And we want to hear from you about other movies we should watch. I don't know. There are so many movies I haven't seen, that Lindsay hasn't seen, that Brandon hasn't seen, that our co-hosts were dying to see. We just can't think of them. We need you, the audience, to tell us what we should watch next. So reach out to us through our Twitter handles. Reach out to @JoinNerdParty on Twitter. Just find us and yell at us and tell us what to watch, and we'll do it. Or we might just ignore you, but really we won't. We want you to ask us we want you to tell us what to watch. But anyway, thank you, Lindsay, for being on this episode again.
I appreciate it. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. Thank you for inviting me here
to my abode.
To your humble abode.
Yes, my Jareth, like, throne the room.
Crazy, creepy throne room. I appreciate the authenticity of you decorating mm-hmm. to... in memory of David Bowie, but I'm a little freaked out. I'm not going to lie, but it's all right.
What can I say?
So anyway, thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you next time.